today, how the women who make your jeans in Lesotho's denim factories are fighting abuse in the workplace.
They're enormous factories, aren't they?
It was late December 2019, just before Christmas, and I travelled out to Lesotho. We had seen a report that had been out a few months earlier, which was disclosing systematic sexual violence at factories in Lesotho making jeans for Levi Strauss, Wrangler, and The Children's Place, which is a US children's retailer.
This is the main gate. So in order for you to get into the into that company, you need to go past that gate.
I was being driven around the industrial complexes where all of the factories are outside of Maseru, the capital of Lesotho, with some of the union leaders of the big garment unions in Lesotho, including Sam Bekele from the National Clothing and Textile Workers Union.
So this was these were the factories that you interviewed workers for your report?
Yeah, for the
It was the start of the day, so there were thousands of workers walking towards the factories dressed in sarongs and t-shirts and headscarves. Most of the workers on the road were women, young women, and they were kind of winding like a big kind of human snake down towards all these big factories that were on the outskirts of the city.
That one, it's so many. Sexual harassment, gender-based violence is very rife.
In Lesotho and across the industry, it's around 80% of the garment workforce are women. And those women are the ones doing the lowest paid, lowest skilled work.
It's competition. So if you don't abide by what they want, the supervisors want, they will generally literally take somebody from outside.
The workers were filing in through one entrance, and then underneath the trees by the side of the factory gates, there were like a separate group of women standing, waiting, watching the workers go through the gates. And they were all kind of holding these very brightly coloured umbrellas and shielding themselves from the sun. These were the women who were the most desperate, who would walk from factory to factory and stand outside all day.
These women are part of a huge clothing industry in Lesotho, a small landlocked country that is an enclave in South Africa. What The Guardian's Annie Kelly found when she went there were some of the worst human rights abuses she'd seen in the years that she's reported on garment factories around the world.
With the WRC report, it was the first time that I'd seen a major brand or brands being linked to gender-based violence on the factory floor. And I was so shocked by what I'd read in that report that I wanted to kind of talk to the women themselves about how it had happened, what they felt should change, and is it possible to tackle gender-based violence in those kind of working environments?
From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, the women fighting sexual abuse in the factories where your jeans are made. Just before we start, this episode does contain descriptions that some might find upsetting. Annie, you went to Lesotho to see for yourself what it was like for the women working in three denim factories in the capital, Maseru, owned by a Taiwanese company called Ninxing. You weren't able to get access to those, but you did go to another clothing factory in the area. What was it like inside?
It was very, very hot, and there were hundreds and hundreds of women inside each of the sewing warehouses. I mean, when you went into the entrance, you could just see these lines of young women at their machines, and the lines kind of went, kind of disappeared into the darkness of the warehouse. So you couldn't really see where the end of these lines were. And all the supervisors appeared to be men walking up and down these lines, checking that the women were working fast enough. There was not really any chatting. It was just business. And the person that was showing us around the factory was saying that this one factory in Lesotho would fill 7 big lorry containers every day with clothing that would then be transported through South Africa out to Europe and the US.
How many other factories are there like this in Lesotho? How big is this industry?
When the industry started in the 90s, the Lesotho government gave very favourable trading and commercial agreements to the Chinese and Taiwanese companies that wanted to come in and invest in Lesotho. It's grown to the scale that the garment factories employ about 46,000 people in Lesotho. which makes the garment factories the biggest employer in the country. So they now employ more people even than the public sector. But what they do very well in Lesotho is jeans. So denim is their thing. They export about 26 million pairs of jeans every year, many of them for big international brands like Levi's.
It's interesting that you have these Taiwanese companies making Levi's jeans in Lesotho, because I always think of Levi's as an all-American brand that really markets itself as a product that is made in America by American workers.
California in 1873. Miners needed tough pants to withstand the wear and tear of the mine. A Bavarian dry goods salesman named Levi Strauss and a tailor named Jacob Davis were granted a patent to put rivets on pants at points of strain. It was a simple idea for a simple product. The American blue jean, the Levi's 501.
I felt the same. I thought, you know, this is one of the most iconic fashion brands in the world, a brand that sells itself on its Americanness, the kind of cowboy image.
Since 1927, Levi's and Cone have put a red thread along the edge of Selvage 501s. It signified Levi's quality and is now known as Redline Selvage.
The idea that it was poor women in Lesotho sewing the red tabs onto the pairs of jeans every day, and they had to, you know, thousands and thousands of pairs of jeans being made by these women every year in this tiny landlocked country. That really surprised me as well. I had never thought of Lesotho as being a place where a pair of Levi jeans would be made. The women I spoke to in Lesotho were earning around £60 a month, which is quite sobering when you think that you can't buy a pair of Levi jeans for £60. And the targets that they're working under are staggering. One of the women I spoke to who was sewing Levi jeans had to make 33 pairs of Levi's a day. And she said that that was really, really tough. If she didn't make 33 pairs of jeans a day, she could get a warning. And if she got three warnings, then she could lose her job. The minute they started working, they would be shouted at and screamed at, called prostitutes, called dogs. This was the typical way that supervisors would be told to incentivize the workers to work harder. And the companies that owned the factories were really not happy with the idea of their workers joining unions. In fact, Nanxing had ejected all unions from their factories.
The report by the Worker Rights Consortium was based on interviews that were conducted away from the factories by a researcher called Stella Lim Tankana. She and her colleagues spoke to over 100 women. When the WRC asked you to interview these workers, what did they want you to find out?
We're just looking into a range of topics that include issues of health and safety, discrimination, issues with contracts that were sometimes written in Mandarin that the workers could not understand, how their hours and their wages were being calculated. You know, those issues still came out, but we quickly became aware that issues of harassment and abuse was really prevalent in these factories.
So you went into these interviews planning to talk to people about abuse in the workplace with regards to, as you've just said, things like contracts being in a language they couldn't understand. But what they actually started telling you was about sexual abuse in these factories. How did you react when you started hearing that? Were you surprised?
It was quite shocking. I remember after a number of interviews, both my colleague and I met in the corridor and we were discussing what are some of the issues that are coming out very strongly. And he also told me that even the women that were talking to him began disclosing issues of sexual assault and abuse that was happening in these factories.
How many people were telling you this?
I mean, out of the 140 workers that we actually spoke with, most of them, even if it had not happened to them, they knew of someone that it had happened to them. That's how serious the issue was.
Are you able to tell me some of the things that the women told you? What was happening in these factories?
So what used to happen as a way of hiring, and I think that was the first opening door for these sexual abuses in the factory, was the fact that both men and women actually seeking employment in the garment industry used to queue at the gates. And so when the women are pulling up their passports, the method of, you know, selection became, if your woman was lighter and was more beautiful, would be picked up by the security guards at the gate. And so if maybe they would exchange numbers, and you know, it would end up in involving sex in some location outside of the factory premises, they would choose them or select them the next day to get into the factory. And so the women had to maintain that practice, because their understanding was that once they do it once, that would ultimately lead to them being employed. But you still had to maintain that relationship with the person that actually hired you. And they did the same thing. You find that in one line, a supervisor is dating almost 5 to 10 women and has probably had sex with all of those women that he has employed. One woman was already in the office, and apparently she was to be transferred back to the factory floor. And one of the managers told her that the only way she's going to be kept in that office if she would agree to have a relationship. And that became, you know, a matter that one day, as they were outside on a factory mission, that ended up being the day that the manager sexually assaulted this worker. And they had to go back to work as if nothing had happened that day until we began this investigation and she could tell her story, and she wanted to know what were her rights. And so we had to intervene in one of these cases. In another incident, a female worker was sexually harassed by his supervisor, who had consistently been touching her breasts. And when she reported the issue to the HR manager, that did not go anywhere. And when she told her husband what had been happening in the factory to her, the husband happened to call the supervisor. This worker was dismissed on the account that she offered the husband the number to this supervisor. So, I mean, the stories were many, were shocking in intensity, that somebody would even lose their job just on an account of reporting what had happened to them, let alone those that, you know, did not have the bravery to report such matters.
I mean, what you're describing, said Lila's, women having to sell their bodies and only able to keep their jobs if they're able to satisfy their male bosses in that way. I mean, it must have been horrific to hear these stories.
It was. I mean, it was almost like a nightmare when we spend almost 10 hours, you know, hearing from one story to another. And it has been very sad to understand that even some workers, for instance, would be transferred from one factory to another because they were refusing proposals from their supervisors.
The three brands that have clothes made in these factories are Levi's, Wrangler and The Children's Place. How willing do you think they were to accept the findings of your report?
The first thing is always to deny that this ever happened, including the factory itself. But once we did produce evidence that this was happening, they were willing to sit on a table with us and discuss what is the way forward, because we also want remedies other than just punishing people, because we also understand that this industry is very important. And so we must find common solutions to these common problems.
Annie, how significant was it that the women in these factories told Dalile about what they'd been through?
The impact of them speaking out about this has been huge. This expose has led to the first ever attempt by the fashion industry to deal with gender-based violence on the factory floor. The brands, Levi's, Wrangler, The Children's Place, the unions, Ninxing, the owner of the factory, and local women's groups coming up with something called the Lesotho Agreement, which was a huge program of different types of interventions that is designed to make sure that this never happens to women again.
So what is the Lesotho Agreement, and what does it mean for the people working in these factories?
They have got agreements in place which have done things like set up an independent body to investigate claims of sexual harassment and assault. This body has the power to dismiss supervisors or managers who might be harassing or assaulting female staff. There's this safe reporting mechanisms that mean that women should now feel safe to disclose if they're facing any problems at work. They have pledged to put in more women in supervisor positions in the factories, which is really good because it also provides upward mobility for the women. So it means that you can actually kind of progress through the ranks and counselling opportunities for the women. So this agreement is a kind of legally binding agreement. It basically means that if Ningxing, the Taiwanese company that own these factories, don't uphold their side of this agreement, they will lose Levi's and Wrangler's and the Children's Place as clients.
But have any of the men who carried out this abuse in the first place, have any of them been punished? Have there been any criminal consequences for them?
No one has been arrested or prosecuted for any of the sexual violence that they perpetrated on the women. It's unclear even if any of those supervisors who were named by the women have lost their jobs.
It's appalling, to be honest. And I do speak with these women. They have my direct line, actually. And sometimes they do call with those, you know, like hurting feelings that it just takes a lot really to go to work and see this particular person. It is very hard, and we would wish for a different outcome.
After this, progress in Lesotho. But will this make any difference in clothing factories around the world? Annie, what does the Lesotho Agreement mean for the wider garment industry?
The agreement would not have come to pass if the brands hadn't been almost forced to come to the table on this. And will it lead to wider change, even in Lesotho, even outside of those three factories in the Ningxing Group, is also up for debate, because at the moment it's just a pilot project running in those three factories. So I think to me it showed nothing is going to happen unless the players at the top take this issue seriously and actually see it as their problem as well.
The issues that we've been speaking about, Annie, they're presumably not just happening in a few factories used by Levi's, but unchecked could be happening across the entire industry. What can fashion brands, what should fashion brands be doing to check that abuses aren't happening in their supply chain?
Levi's, for instance, is acknowledged as being one of the industry's leaders in ethical procurement and ethical purchasing practices. But like every other brand, they rely very, very heavily on this system of social audits and factory inspections.
What is a social audit? How does that work?
Social audits in the fashion industry came about after those huge, big sweatshop exposés of the kind of 80s and 90s. These social audits came about as a response to that. So they all developed these codes of conduct. There should be no child labour. There should be the proper payment of minimum wage, that health and safety standards needs to be adhered to. And the social audits and the factory inspections were the ways that the brands said that they would ensure that those codes of conduct were being enforced at factory level. So they took these kind of codes of conduct and they pushed them down the supply chain onto their factories and onto their suppliers. And then the social audits and the factory inspections are supposed to be there to make sure that those standards were being adhered to. But for years, campaigners have been saying social audits just don't work. That the only people in the supply chain that they are benefiting are the brands themselves, who can then throw their hands up in horror and express dismay when any human rights abuses are uncovered, and point to their audits and say that they've done their best to make sure that their supply chain was clean. I think we as consumers have to think, well, you know, factory audits didn't pick up on disasters like Rana Plaza, where over 1,000 garment workers were crushed beneath a falling garment factory in Bangladesh, which had been audited very recently and had found no health and safety problems. The women I spoke to in Lesotho and other women I've spoken to across the world, other garment workers in places like Bangladesh, India, Sri Lanka, they all say, you know, that the whole thing is a complete sham, that the factories know when the auditors are coming, that the factory will get cleaned up, it will be made safe, that all the toxic chemicals are put away. The factory management are the ones who pick the workers who are going to be interviewed by the auditing team. If there's ever a problem flagged up, the management will know who it is that spoke to the auditors and disclosed a problem. And all of the women said that there was no way that they would ever tell the auditors there was anything wrong. And especially they would never disclose something as sensitive as gender-based violence.
Earlier this year, we made a Today in Focus episode about sustainable fashion. And we talked about how a lot of brands now are marketing themselves on their eco-friendly credentials. But being sustainable doesn't necessarily mean better rights for the workers who make the clothes, does it?
No, it's really confusing. There's a big drive towards environmental sustainability. You've got all the brands launching these kind of conscious ranges. Levi's puts a lot of weight behind its ethical and environmental sustainability initiatives.
Levi's has always been passionate about sustainability. This project will push the industry to create a cleaner jean. Where we lead, others usually follow.
In July, they launched what they said is their most sustainable pair of jeans, which is partly made with organic cotton. They are acknowledged as being one of the better players in the industry, which a campaigner said to me, if this is happening, if you've got abuses happening in Levi's supply chains, then it's happening everywhere.
Coronavirus has had a huge impact on the clothing industry. Most of us have not been going out and buying clothes or nearly as many clothes as we might have done. So what ramifications has this had on factory workers?
The coronavirus has decimated the national export garment economies of places like Bangladesh, Cambodia and Myanmar. This happened because as kind of countries started going into lockdown and high streets started closing, global fashion brands collectively cancelled around £10 billion worth of orders that they had already placed with garment factories, with many of them refusing to even accept the clothes that had been shipped and were in the ports of places like the UK or the US. They refused to pay for those orders.
It's unbelievable. Just left them there, abandoned them essentially.
And by default, their workers. Some were better than others, but it was not just one brand behaving badly. So hundreds of factories have closed. They think up to 2 million workers in Bangladesh alone will lose their jobs by the end of this year. Closer to home up in Leicester, the coronavirus has exposed the terrible working conditions and exploitation facing workers in garment factories in Leicester, linked to some of the big fast fashion brands. You're now getting factories in places like Myanmar and Bangladesh using this as an excuse to purge unions from the factories under the guise of making COVID redundancies.
Going back to Lesotho, Annie, and the three factories there that we've been talking about, how has the coronavirus pandemic impacted them? And have people lost their jobs there too?
People have lost their jobs in Lesotho. There have been redundancies. Factories have closed. Even a factory in Ningxing, one of the Ningxing factories covered by the report, WRC report, has closed recently in the last couple of weeks. So the situation for women there is dire.
Workers were being evicted in their rental homes during the time when they were not being paid by both the employer and the government. We have even seen on national TV where people are coming up to say, we've not had food for more than 3 days. And these are women that have children, you know, young children, young girls and young boys who have gone without food for a very long time. So it's just been a difficult period.
What's interesting is that the factories covered by the Lesotho Agreement have been remarkably resilient. So because the women have more power in those factories now, as a result of the agreement, they've been able to negotiate with the management of those factories and make sure that in two of the factories, there have been no redundancies and everybody got paid. Even when the factory was closed, the workers got their stipend. In the factory that did close, they have negotiated exit packages for the workers who've lost their jobs, which is a stunning achievement. And the Ningxing management have promised that if business picks up, the workers that have lost their jobs in that factory will be re-employed. So I think it shows what a powerful force for change those women in Lesotho have become for themselves and for their colleagues.
Annie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Annie Kelly and Stella Lynn Tankana. You can find Annie's story about this, called Fashion's Dirty Secret, How Sexual Assault Took Hold in Jeans Factories, at theguardian.com, where you can also go back and listen to the other Today in Focus episode I mentioned, Can the Fashion Industry Ever Be Sustainable? I'd also really recommend reading Archie Bland's in-depth reporting on worker abuses in Leicester's clothing factories. We asked the owners of the three factories in this story, Ninxing, for a response to this episode. A spokesperson told us that they have a zero-tolerance policy on gender-based violence and have implemented an anti-harassment code of conduct across all factories. A spokesperson for Levi Strauss & Co. said that they immediately took action when they received the WRC report in 2018. They say they've been watching closely to gauge the programme's effectiveness, and the early assessments have been encouraging. At the same time, they say they recognise that these issues are difficult to detect and remediate through audits alone. They say they believe it is crucial to understand the root causes of sexual harassment, and that's why they've enhanced their assessment programme to conduct off-site interviews and now require that assessment teams have female monitors in order to create a safe environment. A spokesperson for Contour Brands, which owns Wrangler, said the company has also been encouraged by the initial progress of the Lesotho Agreement, which they hope will become a model programme that others in the apparel and other business sectors can replicate and improve upon around the world. They say there is still much work to do, as detecting and addressing sexual harassment and abuse requires sustainable remedies and continuous coordination among experts and others. The Children's Place didn't respond to our request for comment. Alongside the other two brands, in a joint response to Annie's article, they said that they are committed to protecting workers' rights and fostering well-being at third-party supplier factories so that all workers, especially female workers, feel safe, valued and empowered. They believe this programme can create lasting change and better working environments at these factories. Today's episode was produced by Hannah Moore and sound design was by Axel Kakutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.